Support for WMNF comes from our members, the 59th Annual Florida Folk Festival with John Anderson, Billy Dean, Brent Prestige, the Aaron O'Rourke Trio, Tom Shedd, and over 300 entertainers performing Memorial Day weekend in White Springs, May 27, 28, and 29, floridafolkfestival.com. Hey, if your cell phone gets the internet, you've got your own mobile tour guide to Tropical Heat Wave. While you're at the show, you can see when each band's playing or see who's coming up at any of the venues. On your phone, just go to wmnf.org/heatwave. Hey, I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be discussing fish, the oceans, and the environment with author Mark Kurlansky, whose new book is World Without Fish. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is the Hollywood Flames with Two Little Bees here on Talking Animals. That was the Hollywood Flames with
Skippy and Rover on a hellbound ride.
Just rolls right along. That was one of those cool new CD players. Anyways, that was the Hollywood Flames with Two Little Bees. An animal tune. To kick us off today's edition of Talking Animals. My name is Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Mark Kurlansky, author of the award-winning New York Times bestseller, Cod, a biography of the fish that changed the world, and other books, including his new one, World Without Fish, ostensibly a book for kids about what's happening to fish, the oceans, and the environment. But it operates on more levels than that, and it's gorgeously illustrated by artist Frank Stockton. And interwoven with the factual information is a full-color graphic novel. So we'll discuss that and more with Mark Kurlansky in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. One winner will receive a copy of Mark Kurlansky's new book, World Without Fish. Another winner will win tickets to see Stolen Idols and Flat Earth Society, two Tropical Heat Wave bands who are performing the next night, this Sunday at the Palladium in St. Petersburg. So that's what you could win tickets to. And we'll also speak with Maggie Fitzsimmons, who came up with the idea for Kids for Paws, a fundraising contest for kids 6 through 13, taking place the entire month of May, with proceeds going to the Animal Coalition of Tampa Spay-Neuter Clinic. Maggie Fitzsimmons is 12 years old. Right now, though, it's time for animal news and announcements. Look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events coming up. So let's turn now to those. We welcome your comments, as always, by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Let's Talk Turkey, as it were, produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item concerns the new movie Water for Elephants, romantic drama set in 1930s animal circus in the USA. And starring, of course, Reese Witherspoon and Robert Pattinson. And anyways, premiering sort of all over the world right now and getting all kinds of attention. Sometimes not the greatest attention. Because in the film, Rosie, the elephant, played by an actual elephant by the name of Ty, is attacked by the circus owners who beat her with a bullhook. But the producers, stars, and trainers have been at pains to stress that Ty was trained with kindness, marshmallows, and positive reinforcement. And folks that trained him, Gary Johnson of actually Have Trunk Will Travel, as he trained him, claimed Ty was never hit in any way. So anyway, here's the thing, though. Just in the last few days, a pretty shocking video filmed at Have Trunk Will Travel in 2005 and posted online recently by Animal Defenders International after the London premiere. It tells a pretty different story. You can search that pretty easily online now. You can just say, video exposes movie star electric shocked. Any phrases like that will get you there. And Jan Kramer, president of ADI, said, "We were uncomfortable with the message of this film, but the more we saw the repeated assertions that the elephant has been treated with love and affection and never been abused, we realized that we had to get the truth out. The public, the stars, and the filmmakers have been duped." So, again, may you want to check out the video? May or may not. As a result, want to check out the film. Coming up locally, well, a couple things. We already alluded to one of them. WMF's gigantic, fabulous annual party, Tropical Heat Wave. It's the 30th annual one this Saturday, May 14th, in and around Ybor City. Can't wait for the so many bands I want to see. I'll be dashing from stage to stage. But also earlier this Saturday, May 14th in Ybor City, there's a cool-sounding event called... Well, it's actually called Good Dog Day, and it's part of Dog Bite Prevention Week. And it claims to be going to make dogs sweeter, owners smarter, and everyone safer. It's taking place in Centennial Park from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. So you can do that. Take a little breather. Gear up for Heat Wave. Beautiful. So there'll be dog training with demos, contests, and prizes. There'll be microchips. Now, both the dog training and the microchips are incredibly reasonably priced. We cannot tell you the price on the air, as you know, probably, but incredibly reasonably priced. The microchips, at least while they last, be sure to bring a rabies vaccination certificate if you want to get in on that. But there's also shots and registration tags. There's going to be food, fun, adoptable pets, and more. So, again, that's this Saturday, Centennial Park from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Found this story, courtesy of sort of CBS and AP. Headline, man who kept alligator to woo woman gets charged. An Illinois man who was charged with possession of a dangerous animal claims his 4-foot-long pet alligator was actually a chick magnet. Dwayne Yarbrough, 43, of Fort High, says he bought the reptile 5 years ago in Indiana for only $200. He kept the alligator because it attracted women, he says. In order to keep the unusual pet from growing too large, Yarbrough told investigators he kept it in a small tank and only fed it 10 live mice per month. Animal control investigators found the gator in a fish tank in Yarbrough's kitchen, but did not say how they learned of its existence. I was going to do a little gag and a little voice there, but I thought whatever. Okay, also coming up this weekend, Sarasota Bradenton's Canine Companions are going to make it a dog day afternoon, Saturday, May 14th, noon to 4 p.m. at a family-friendly adopt-a-thon that will benefit local animal groups at Ghetto Toyota in Bradenton. And there'll be interactive agility demonstration, mini obedience training session, pet portraits, door prizes, doggy costume, much more. So you can find out more by emailing info@sarasotadog.com. And also on the horizon, animal communications basic and advanced courses will be offered next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, May 21st and 22nd from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Clearwater. They will be taught by Irene Lane from the Lane Holistic Institute in Springfield, Pennsylvania. But again, they'll be offered in Clearwater. And for more information about prices, details, etc., you can call Nanny Fran at 727-657-4724. And lastly, for now at least, coming up May 26th, there'll be a fundraiser at Sweet Tomatoes, the restaurant, to raise money for the Little Cats Rescue. So, again, that's Thursday, May 26th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Sweet Tomatoes location in Port Richey on 19th North. It's 1 mile north of Gulfview Square Mall. For directions, you can visit sweettomatoes.com. But I believe a portion of the proceeds donated or generated during that hour goes to our friends at Little Cats Rescue. All right, so let's step now into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Brian Regan with a piece chosen with Mark Kalansky's new book in mind called Fishing on TV on today's Comedy Corner. I'm talking animals.
I like watching fishing on TV. You ever? That'll make you worry about yourself. You ever watch fishing on TV for like 15 minutes and then just go, boy, I better get a life. I'm watching fishing. I'm not even fishing. I'm watching fishing. Too lazy to fish. I'm taping fishing. To watch again later. Come on over, I got a fishing tape. No, a new one. And at the end of the fishing show, they roll credits. There are like 90 people involved with the two guys fishing. What are they all doing? And one of the credits is film editor. This poor guy. He's got to watch all the footage that's not exciting enough to make it into that final show. That's got to be hell. He's got to sit there all day just going, no. No, 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 fast forward, fast forward, fast forward, oh. Mm-mm, no, that was just the worm, when you put the worm. And I saw this credit at the end of the fishing show, I'm not making this up, writer. I swear, there's a writer for the fishing show? What's he writing?
Ooh, she's a beauty.
Typing it out. Zing! Guy's got to worry about his lines. Finally catches a fish. You have a line. Oh, it's a fish and it's a beauty. He's a beauty fish. Fish and it's a beauty. He's a fish and a beauty fish. He's a fish and beauty fish. All right, caught. You okay, man? You need some water? Are you all right? I couldn't do it any better.
All right, that was Brian Regan with a piece called Fishing on TV from his album simply entitled Live. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Mark Kurlansky. As I touched on earlier in the show, Mark is the author of the award-winning New York Times bestseller, Cod, a biography of the fish that changed the world, and other books. His new one, World Without Fish, is ostensibly a book for kids about what's happening to fish, the oceans, and the environment, but it operates on more levels than that, and it's gorgeously illustrated by artist Frank Stockton. So before we meet him On the air, I want to be sure to mention that Mark will appear at Inkwood Books in Tampa on Tuesday, May 17th at 6 p.m. All right, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Mark Kurlansky to Talking Animals. Welcome, Mark.
Hi.
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
My pleasure.
So let's jump right into this. So with an author with your track record does a kid's book, it's hard not to sit up and take notice. And then seeing as we're not really talking about a, 15 or 20 page sort of soft outing replete with sing-song rhyme scheme, it's sort of even more so. I mean, this is far more ambitious than what many of us would think of as a kid's book.
I think of it as a family book.
Okay.
Like a family movie. It's a book that everybody in the family can read.
Mm-hmm.
I started off with the idea of writing it for kids. I thought, because I talk to kids a lot, and I go and I talk to schools, and there's just a lot of confusion about this subject. There also is for adults. So I thought somebody ought to just very clearly, in readable English, as opposed to the English that scientists and government regulators talk in,
right,
in just clear language, explain what's going on in the oceans, what would happen if it doesn't get fixed, which would be really bad, what people are doing to try to fix it, what's working, what isn't, what the problems are, and what you can do about it. And in explaining all this clearly to kids, I realized that this was also exactly what adults needed. So it's really kind of a book for everyone.
Well, I'm very happy to hear you say that, because I felt like otherwise, either way, perhaps, I had a small confession to make, which is that World Without Fish was sort of sent to me out of the blue, as many books are, and because it was a book of yours and had this kind of cool, arresting cover by Frank Stockton, I just sort of picked it up and started reading it. But I didn't realize until some days later that it was even intended as a kid's book. So, but again, I think that speaks to sort of what became kind of your approach, because it's really, there's a lot of actually great, great information, but it's presented, like you said, it's sort of a family movie or maybe like
the. I think I stumbled across an idea that as a parent, I would like to see more of, books that are, that parents can read and kids can read and the family can talk about.
Right. Well, I also wondered too if at least when you set out to do this, I know you have a young daughter, Talia, and if that was partly the chief, one of the chief reasons for writing, like, hey, here's a book that, as you said earlier, kind of instead of the gobbledygook and some of the other stuff, here's something that she would actually pick up, read, enjoy, and walk away with a lot more understanding from.
Yeah, right. I mean, we spend a lot of time by the ocean. We fish together, and fishing is a great way of teaching kids about the natural order. We also maintain a fish aquarium at home, which is a great teaching tool. And so, all of these questions arise about what's going on and the state of the marine ecosystem and I wanted to explain it.
Yeah. Well, and also, first let me just let people know that might just be tuning in. This is Talking Animals, and if you are just tuning in, we're speaking with author Mark Kurlansky, whose new book is World Without Fish, and he'll also be in the flesh locally next Tuesday, May 17th at Inkwood Books in Tampa at 6 p.m. So if you'd like to join the conversation, ask Mark a question, or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. So, yeah, well, here's the thing, though, about that, Mark, is that, once my powers of observation returned after, reading some of the book, I did finally see a line on the book jacket that reads, for ages 9 and up. But I gotta say that I think at least it might take a pretty enormously precocious 9-year-old to comprehend some of the really important points that are made here.
Well, it was all vetted by my 9-year-old.
Okay, well.
She's 10 now.
It's Talia certified.
I gave it to her chapter by chapter and asked her, if there's anything she didn't understand or any places where she lost interest. And I revise things accordingly.
Yeah.
She likes to say she made sure I didn't get too boring.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah, well, I guess.
It's a good service to have somebody to keep you from getting too boring.
Sure. In-house, no less. Yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, I guess, yeah, nonetheless, I guess there are times, I think, some pretty nuanced, ideas here, or even ones that might strike, you know, certain kids at least as contradictory, like, well, one thing that comes to mind is, you know, if you, at one point you're talking about, if you don't eat a troubled species like cod or Chilean sea bass, that's not necessarily as correct a thing to do, quote unquote, given the fishermen who are fishing the right way, who you sort of do want to encourage.
Yeah, so that's the ones that are doing it the right way.
Yeah.
I think that, a lot of people make a big mistake in thinking that you have to make things simple for kids.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with kids' minds. They have great minds.
Sure.
And they are capable of, distilling information in all of its complexity. And when we try to make it simple, really what we're doing is not telling them the truth about things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and also, as you said earlier, and then I sort of had a kind of a slightly different comparison. You said it's sort of a family movie. And to me, it was kind of almost more one of the things that came to mind was like Looney Tunes cartoons where, you know, you can come in and understand it and appreciate it at one level if you are a 9-year-old or 11-year-old or whatever. And, you know, if you're older than that or a full-grown adult even, you have a different kind of appreciation. But
yeah,
but
actually, there's a lot of stuff like that now, like the cartoon on television, Phineas and Ferb.
Mm-hmm.
It has incredible things in there for adults.
Yeah. Well, like you say, I think that the idea of those things and your book is let's not talk down. Let's have them step up to whatever level they can, and there's stuff there for all levels.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what you need to do for kids, and it's what they want. Kids hate it when you're condescending to them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, okay, so as I think you know, I'm sitting in a radio studio in Florida where there's a huge percentage of people who fish. Either that's the way they make their living or that's their way of life. And again, as I mentioned a couple times, you'll be in Florida yourself next week. So what should Floridians or others whose lives may be similarly kind of fish-centric, whatever their age is, what should they know about the book? I mean, if you were asked to reduce, you know, the central content of the book to two or three key themes, what might those be?
Well, one important thing is at the very opening of the book, and that is that although this is a book about the possibility of destroying the planet, there's no evil genius at work here. There's no bad guys to this story. Fishermen are not bad guys. Fishermen were the first ones to recognize this problem and have sacrificed more than anyone else to correct it. And so if you want to deal with this problem, stop thinking in terms of bad guys and treat everybody with respect and listen to other people's points of view.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. Another thing is that we have to fix this or we are facing a cataclysm of unprecedented proportion. We're talking about the dismantling of the planet's ecosystem. So this is not something that we can ignore. And we can participate and we can do a lot of things. I think that a lot of fishing can be regulated better in the marketplace than in government.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, this book really seems to be speaking, you know, from that standpoint and to the marketplace.
Yeah, you know, fishing is a commercial enterprise, and commercial enterprises provide what customers want. And if customers make clear that they want fish from sustainable fisheries, that's what they'll get. But there's a big caveat here. You have to understand what a sustainable fishery is and which fish come from them.
Well,
one of the things you have to do is you have to pressure your markets to provide more and better information.
Well, absolutely. And I think one of the things that people find confusing at times is what that really means, sustainable fishery. And also I think just the idea of overfishing, people I don't think have sometimes who want to, have a clear idea of that. I mean, what are some of the more important things about overfishing that you think maybe the wider population should understand,
The first thing they should understand is that most fish are caught within the regulated 200-mile limit of one country or another. And if that country is in North America, if it's the U.S. or Canada or Europe, this is a regulated fishery, and there's not a lot of illegal fishing going on. So where there is overfishing, it is a fault in the regulations. The fishermen are doing what is demanded of them. We're having trouble figuring out regulations that arrive at the right equation. It's not that there are evil, greedy fishermen going around doing things they're not supposed to be doing.
Well, and also one of the things that really comes through in the book is that not only is that not the case, but these sort of equations need to be recalculated constantly.
Yeah. It's a very difficult, complicated thing. And people need to understand what this word sustainable means, because I get this question all the time. Well, if everybody eats sustainable fish, won't we run out of them? That question tells me that people don't understand what the word means, because what sustainable means is that it's a fishery that the amount of fish they take does not exceed the amount of fish that the population can produce. So that if you are fishing at that sustainable level, it means that you can fish at that level forever and never have a decline in the fish population.
Yeah.
That is the goal of all fisheries.
Right. And again, I think that's even a classic example of things that just that very idea sometimes eludes people or just seems fuzzy to people. So, I have many other questions, but we got a caller here that apparently might have another one. Well, hi, you're on Talking Animals with Mark Kurlansky.
Hi, this is Bill Clearwater.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, what about sustainable factory fishing? I'm not talking about, the pens floating in the ocean. I'm talking about sort of like the operation that's going on in Boston where they're industrially in buildings raising the Burundi fish. It's an Australian freshwater fish, and also fishing ponds like for the tilapia. Are they making any kind of impact, either positive or negative?
Fish farming in general is more negative than positive, although it has a tremendous potential to be positive. But the way it's done now, farmed fish are being fed wild fish, usually scooped up from very abusive fishing methods and grinding everything up into meal and pellets, so that when you eat a farmed fish, you're killing more wild fish than if you just ate a wild fish. And they tend to be very polluting also. However, there are exceptions, and tilapia, which you mentioned, is probably one of them, because tilapia doesn't eat fish. It was brought here to clean out canals because it eats algae and plants. I was saying this to somebody who was interviewing me, and they said, yeah, well, but tilapia, it doesn't have a lot of taste. It's a very bland fish. I said, well, it's a vegetarian, it's one of the problems in all of these issues is that there's lots of caveats and exceptions. So there is some fish farming that is very beneficial. There's a lot of fish farming that's very harmful.
Bill, thanks so much for your question.
Well, can I ask one little follow-up? Are you familiar with that Burundi operation in Massachusetts? I think it's in Massachusetts, where they took over an old industrial building. And there's three levels. The top floor is where they start to fry. And as they grow bigger, they move them down to the second level. And then the bottom level is the marketable level. And there are fish that get to about 4 foot in size. They're very large. And they're also a vegetarian fish, the Burundi.
Yeah, this has been mentioned to me a couple of times. I haven't checked it out yet. I will check it out. It's an interesting idea.
Bill, again, thanks for your question. And interestingly, one of our emailers had almost the same question, phrased almost the same way about wondering your thoughts about fish farms. So Mark, can you talk a little bit, Bill's follow-up question kind of reminded me a little bit about the sort of, I think what made people may find interesting about the sort of comparison that you touch on once or twice in your book about how mammals giving birth to babies and birds laying eggs compares ultimately to fish laying eggs.
Yeah, for a very long time, it was commonly believed that overfishing was impossible. And the reason was that fish lay so many eggs that you couldn't possibly diminish them by the amount you could fish. A large codfish will lay over 1 million eggs, just the one fish. Darwin explained this. Darwin explained almost everything. Everybody needs to read Darwin. Animals that reproduce a lot, it's because they don't have a good chance of survival. So a mammal will produce 1 to 6 offspring, a bird will lay 1 to 6 eggs, and a big codfish will lay over 1 million eggs. Of those over 1 million eggs, they will be lucky if 6 of them make it to mature fish. Eggs get eaten, they get destroyed in storms, small fish get eaten. It's tough out there, and very few fish make it to adulthood.
Yeah, I just found that piece of information, just the percentage, quite striking. So this is Talking Animals. My guest is author Mark Kurlansky, whose new book is World Without Fish. We invite you to join the conversation. Please call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. So, Mark, for years, I feel like I heard the phrase Chilean sea bass bandied about, pretty liberally. So one of the many things I also learned from this book is that Chilean sea bass is sort of a double misnomer.
Yeah, it's not necessarily from Chile, and it's definitely not sea bass. They used to call it Patagonian toothfish.
Yeah.
And somebody made the decision that nobody would buy something called that. But you know, marketing is very involved in fish names all over the place. I mean, they're in Florida. Have you noticed how dolphin fish has become mahi-mahi, which is the Hawaiian word? But they decided it was bad marketing, this habit in Florida of referring to it as dolphin fish because people thought they were eating dolphins.
Yeah, yeah. No, but that actually raises its own question. I mean, how are those things, and maybe I'm spacing on this if this was covered in the book, but how is that determined? Like, who says, hey, you know what, we're not calling it, we're calling it Chilean sea bass because that's better, and we're calling it mahi-mahi because that's better than dolphin. I mean, how is that sort of pushed through?
Well, somebody brings something to the market with a certain name, and, you know, if your fish called mahi-mahi is selling a lot better than the next guy's fish that's called dolphin fish, the dolphin fish guy's going to go over to your name.
I see. Okay, so it's pretty loose and unofficial, it sounds
right.
Like. Okay,
right.
Gotcha.
And there's lots of, you know, redfish, for example. You know, redfish means different things in different places. The New England redfish is a totally different species of fish than the Gulf redfish.
So again, the terms really, I guess what we're starting to see is that they may or may not mean anything, or they may have some weird sort of
absolutely.
Origin.
That's the way it is with fish names. The British, have this strong cultural attachment to cod. And so everywhere they go, if there isn't cod, they name something cod. So, you know, they have in Australia, they have the thing called blue cod. It has absolutely nothing to do with cod whatsoever, but it means that they can eat cod.
Right, sure. It sounds like it's a powerful selling tool, really, at that point, just to put cod, tack on cod.
Right.
So let's take another caller. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Mark Kurlansky.
Hello, my name is Lance from St. Petersburg.
Hi, Lance.
Hey, I just wanted to say, you know, they were talking about the taste of tilapia being bland, but, you know, if you've ever, like, had curried tilapia or 100 other ways of seasoning it. So tilapia, I feel, is like a wonderful alternative to these farm-raised salmon, which, you know, he was talking about the problems with that. One thing I was wondering, and I'm sorry I tuned in kind of late, I don't know if you mentioned this already, but somebody up a little bit north from Tampa is doing a thing where he raises tilapia in these swimming pool ponds and then circulates the water through a hydroponic growing system. Have you guys spoke about that system at all?
Not about that system specifically.
Okay. Does your guest, is he familiar with that?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I mean, actually, to be honest, I'm much more of an ocean guy.
Okay.
But it's interesting what you're saying about tilapia. It's, you're absolutely right. I mean, first of all, you're right from an environmental standpoint. You're much better off eating tilapia than farmed salmon. You should never eat farmed salmon. But,
And why I saw this in the book, but for those listening who haven't had a chance to read the book, why do you say that, Mark?
Well, it's fed, wild fish from bad fisheries. It's, fed, chemicals. It's, the pens are polluting. It's producing, genetically modified, fish that can't survive in the wild, and if they get out, and they have gotten out in cases, if they mix with wild, it can destroy the species. There's just all sorts of problems with it. And on top of all that, it's just not nearly as good as a wild salmon.
Right, okay.
One thing I wanted to mention, I live on a pond here in St. Petersburg, and I work at a ministry that gets bread donated for distribution to the homeless, and all the bread that is molded, which is a huge quantity, and it's unbelievable how much bread we throw away in this city. And a few years ago, I started throwing that into the pond. I just had a few tilapia. Within about a year, I had hundreds of tilapia in there, and I started farming them out of there for my dinner table, and they grow huge, and it seems like bread is a totally, you know, we're wasting all this bread. We got to get on the bandwagon here, the green bandwagon, and stop wasting everything and start, you know, kind of recycling.
Right.
And that's one way of recycling.
Right. And I also agree with you from a gastronomic point of view. The fact that it is such a bland fish lends it to all kinds of sauces and things. But, it's funny. It's a fish that appeals more to people who don't like fish.
Right.
Because it doesn't have that much taste. If you, personally, my idea of a way to cook fish is to just grill it with nothing on it and just eat it because I just really like the taste of fish. Tilapia is something that, you know, sauces and seasoning. But it's good food.
Lance, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you very much.
So, Mark, we're sort of nearing the end of our time, and the last bit of conversation kind of makes me want to ask, first of all, there's a number of folks listening to the show who don't eat fish at all. But for those who do eat fish and prefer to make informed choices, we talked about a couple of things that maybe you should not do. But what fish should people focus on eating from your standpoint, and why?
Well, they should eat fish from sustainable fisheries, which is often line-caught fish as opposed to caught in draggers or longliners. From a health point of view, they should try to eat at least some of their fish low in the food chain. That's more for your health than the health of the oceans.
Can you name a few specific?
Sardines. Sardines are an excellent fish to eat. They aren't native to where you are, unfortunately. California has a very good sustainable sardine fishery. Sardine are rich in health benefits from oils and things, and low in the food chain, so they don't have a lot of mercury and things like that in them.
And also, too, if I remember correctly, that not only you recommend sardines generally as you are now, but I also think in the book that you say that the you particularly would recommend sardines for kids.
Yeah. Doctors recommend them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They also happen to be my daughter's favorite food. She loves grilled whole fresh sardines and has been deboning them herself since she was about 5 years old.
Wow.
It's her little trick.
All right. Well, Talia comes back around to being a key part of this book. So, so Mark, we have, I think, just about reached the end of our time, but I do thank you again for joining us on Talking Animals. Again, the book, the newest book, is World Without Fish. Again, Mark will be coming by for a book signing and talk next Tuesday, May 17th at Inkwood Books at 6 p.m., and his website is markkurlansky.org. So thanks again, Mark, for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you. Very nice talking to you.
All right. Good luck. Bye-bye. All right. Duncan Strauss, you're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be two separate prizes today. A copy of Mark Kurlansky's new book that we were discussing, World Without Fish, or a pair of tickets to see Stolen Idols and Flat Earth Society at the Palladium this Sunday, one day after both bands play WNF's Tropical Heatwave. So, those will go to the first person who calls in, first and second person, really, who calls in 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this sort of ironically relevant animal tune. And first person that does that, that can choose the book or the tickets. And the second person, we want to know who the artist is. So, it's name that animal tune. And in this case today, name that artist behind that animal tune. Talking Animals.
Look here, girls. Take this advice and remember always in life. Into each heart, some tears must fall.
Alright. Well, for folks who can name that animal tune, we'll probably take it off the air before we conclude the show. So it is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and gonna introduce shortly Maggie Fitzsimmons, who came up with this cool idea for Kids for Paws. It's a fundraising contest for kids 6 to 13. It's taking place right now, the entire month of May. And all proceeds go to Animal Coalition of Tampa Spay Neuter Clinic. So, as I mentioned earlier, Maggie is 12 years old and making her our youngest guest ever since we launched Talking Animals almost 8 years ago. So, let's welcome now Maggie. Maggie, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hey, thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So tell me first how you came up with the idea for the fundraiser.
Well, they had the fundraiser Stride for Strays in October, which I participated in, but it was a lot of people, and I noticed there weren't a lot of kids because it wasn't really made for kids. So I thought maybe they should have a contest that centers more around kids like me that would be able to participate, and then they could have a contest that could be centered around kids. That way kids wouldn't have more chance. And I kind of like the idea of kids getting involved while helping animals.
Sure.
Because I really like animals. Like, I've liked animals since I was a little kid. And also, I love kids. So I thought it'd be a great idea to help kids get involved by helping animals.
That is such a cool idea. I really like this. So can you, I think I know, but I think the people listening might not know how the contest works exactly, the Kids for Paws contest.
Well, we have a page on FirstGiving. It's firstgiving.com/ACTampa.
Okay.
And kids can sign up, and then what they do is they can send their page, they make a little page, and they send it to their friends and family, and they can donate online or offline. And then they turn their offline donations in at the event on June 4th, or they, if they get donations online, it goes directly to the Animal Coalition of Tampa.
Wow, that sounds really cool, and I'm going to tell folks a little bit more about the big awards event on June 4th that you just mentioned. But let me ask you this, Maggie, could a kid, let's say a kid only just hearing about the contest today, could they still get involved with it, or is it sort of too late now since it's already been going on for a couple weeks?
Oh, yeah, definitely they could get involved. I mean, it's not really about winning. Really, this is about getting kids involved and helping the animals. So, and I mean, where every kid who participates is not going to leave empty-handed, and really any donation counts. So, like, even if a kid started today and by the end of May they raised $20, that would still be, like, amazing because that could help, like, 10, 20 animals.
Right, that's $20 more that the ACT didn't have before.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. So here's the thing you mentioned, because this all kind of, after the whole month-long contest, then there's this big awards event on June 4th at Seaplane Basin Park, Davis Island, and that's from 9 in the morning till noon. And, of course, Dogs on Leashes are welcome to that, and there's going to be vendors and a bounce house and music by Gracie Grishup from Sunset Bridge, who we love here, and face painting and games and all kinds of stuff. So I gather that really every kid that participates, regardless of how well they do, we'll get something kind of, you know, like on that awards day on June 4th.
Yeah, we're going to have, you know, little games where they'll get little prizes, and we're going to have a sign-in booth. So for all the kids who participated, we might get little goodie bags, or we've been talking to United Skate to be giving free passes for the kids.
Oh, that's so cool. So again, I want to let people know that might be hearing about this and think, hey, either I'm a kid or I know a kid or I have a kid who might want to get involved. If you go to firstgiving.com/ACTampa, that's how you get started and get your kid registered, and they can quickly try to, you know, do some good here and do themselves some good as well as ACT. So that's cool. So Maggie, sounds like you mentioned earlier that you've always kind of loved animals. So are there animals that are your favorites?
Well, I like dogs. I mean, I've grown up having dogs.
Yeah.
And I mean, I like cats, but my mom doesn't, so we don't have cats.
I see.
I really like all animals. Dogs probably are my favorite, though.
So you sound like you live with at least one dog right now.
Yeah, we have one dog, Murphy. He's
Murphy.
Very unique.
Nice, yeah, cool. And you think when you're older, you think you'd like to do something with animals, work with animals in some way?
Definitely. I want to be a vet. That's something I really want to do.
Cool.
I've been looking at that because I know they have at Florida, they have a good vet school.
Yeah. For sure. Well, that's great. That's really cool that you seem like you already know where you're heading and you're already doing all kinds of good work. And so I assume you're probably participating yourself in the Kids for Paws contest.
Actually, I'm not, but my brother is, and I've been helping my brother.
Oh.
He's actually in the lead right now. He's raised $320 so far.
Wow.
So,
good for him.
He's been doing really great, and he's been trying really hard, and I'm really proud of him.
That's so cool, and I guess you, just because you kind of came up with the idea that maybe you decided I shouldn't probably be in the contest myself.
Is that,
yeah, I gotcha. Well, gosh, Maggie, it's really been nice talking with you. I love the... I love your idea, and it's just so great. Like you say, it's great for kids, it's great for animals, it's great for our friends at ACT, and I just think it's just a lovely, lovely idea, and I'm hoping everybody has a great time the rest of the month, and then, of course, everybody's going to have a great time June 4th at the big awards event, Seaplane Basin Park in Davis Island, and again, you can find out more by going to actampa.org or calling over there to Animal Coalition of Tampa. So, again, Maggie, thank you very, very much for joining me today on Talk Animals. It was a real pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
Okay.
It was great speaking to you, too.
Oh, thanks a lot. Okay, take care now.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Maggie Fitzsimmons. All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back with another edition next Wednesday, May 18th, at 11 a.m. right here on Talking Animals. I hope you'll join me then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott with the All Souls version of It's the Music, airing next noon to 3. His guest today will be the fabulous Brett Denon, who will perform and do some chatting with Scott. Brett's terrific. I think I first saw him about 5 years or so ago at Bumbershoot, and saw him a bunch of times since. He's just terrific, and that's going to be a real treat, so be sure to stay tuned for Scott and Brett. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one from Antsy McLean and the Trailer Park Troubadours, who will be performing this Saturday at WNF's 30th Tropical Heat Wave in and around Ybor City. I'm so excited. I can't wait. You have your tickets, right? Right? If you don't, please go to WMNF.org, call Miss Julie here, but get your tickets to Heatwave. And we'll see you there. This is indeed music from Heatwave back. Antsy McLean with the Ballad of Skippy and Rover, taking us up to the NPR News. And then Scott Elliott and his great, great show, joined today again by Brett Denon, right here on WMNF Tampa. We'll see you next Wednesday, 11 a.m., Talking Animals.
Skippy and Rover on a hellbound ride. Just a runt and his brother running side by side. But that's not where their tale begins. Yeah, it's a clockwise circle, that's the way life spins. Somewhere in the middle of fact and folklore, puppy mill brothers in a strip mall store. Well, they found them a home and a nice family. They're paper trained in AKC. Some say the brothers couldn't ask for more. With an invisible fence and a doggy door. But something smelled wrong in the air that day. They dropped them off at the vet and they drove away. Well, Skippy and Rover woke later on. The whole world had changed and something was gone. They just lay in a funk for the next few days. With those cone collars on and a doped up haze. Crying over the loss of what might have been. Their high-pitched howls lost in the wind. Yeah, they plotted their revenge on an autumn night. Mapping their escape in the blue moonlight. Rover missed the paper on the living room floor. And Skippy left a present by the bathroom door. When they see this mess, it's gonna give them a jolt. Hell has no fury like a dog's revolt. Yeah, Skippy and Rover, it's the end of the line. They've heard who's a good boy for the last darn time. Now Skippy and Rover are living up to their name. Skipping town and hopping westbound trains. They've given up a life of kibbles and bits and manicured lawns to take their breaks. Yeah, Skippy and Rover, it's the end of the line. They've heard who's a good boy for the last darn time. Oh!
When they roll into town, the ladies rave and rant. But with their puppy dog eyes, they just say, I can't. They don't go into detail, they just say no. Refer to something bad happening a long time ago. When they pay their tabs and mosey out the door, it makes the ladies want them even that much more. So if you see a couple dogs with a mean-eyed stare, no leash, no collar, got their nose to the air, saluting all the trees and making their mark, with a hole in their soul and a longing in their bark. Running wild and free and breaking all the laws. They may be fixed, but they still got their convictions. Yes, yeah, Skippy and Rover, it's the end of the line. They've heard who's a good boy for the last darn time. Now Skippy and Rover living up to their names, skipping town and hopping westbound trains. They've given up a life of kibbles and bits and manicured lawns to take their naps. Yeah, Skippy and Rover, it's the end of the line. They've heard who's a good boy for the last darn time.
That's Ancy McLean and the Trailer Park Troubadours, one of 57, I think it is, fabulous acts playing Tropical Heat Wave this Saturday, May 14th, in and around Ybor City. So go to WMNF.org. There's full schedule and information. You can get your tickets there. You can call Miss Julie at 813-238-8001. She'll fix you up. But don't miss it. It's going to be fabulous. It's the 30th annual. All right, Scott Elliott's next with his special guest Brett Denon on Insta Music on WMNF Tampa. See you next week.
From NPR News and